They were all encouraged and ate some food themselves. Although there were 276 altogether, there were 276 of us on board. When they had eaten as much as they wanted, they lightened the ship by throwing the grain into the sea. Now when daylight came, they did not recognize the land, but they saw a bay with a sandy beach where they decided to run the ship aground if they could. Cutting loose the anchors, they let them in the sea and at the same time untied the ropes that held the rudders. In another version, they said they let down four anchors. Then they hoisted the foresail to the wind and made for the beach. But the ship struck a sandbar and ran aground, and the bow stuck fast and would not move, and the stern was broken to pieces by the pounding of the surf. The soldiers planned to kill the prisoners to prevent any of them from swimming away and escaping. But the centurion wanted to spare Paul's life and kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and get to land. The rest were to get there on planks or on pieces of the ship. In this way, everyone reached land in safety. Chapter 28. Are you still awake? Once safely on shore, we found out that the island was called Malta. The islanders showed us unusual kindness. They built a fire and welcomed us all because it was raining and cold. Paul gathered a pile of brushwood, and as he put it on the fire, a snake or a viper, driven out by the heat, fastened itself on his hand. And when the islanders saw the snake hanging from his hand, they said to each other, "This man must be a murderer, for though he escaped from the sea, justice has not allowed him to live." But Paul shook the snake off into the fire and suffered no ill effects. And the people expected him to swell up or suddenly fall dead. But after waiting a long time and seeing nothing unusual happen to him, they changed their minds and said he was a god. That's our text this morning. So friends here, if you were in my shoes this morning, what the heck would you talk about from this text? So with the help of the people around you, I would like you to come up with your own talk, and I've done my dash. I'm going to do a runner. I'm going to escape. So what would you talk about this morning from this text? With the person next to you or just quietly by yourself? Work it out. Go to it. A strange silence has entered the room. Can anyone give me a title of your talk? If you were to give one, what would you call it? From this text this morning, this long passage. Beg your pardon? Willem. Willem, come on, Will. A private. Oh, come on. Share it. Will. Yeah, oh, good. Can we swap? Yeah, I think. I think you're onto something. Yeah, that's great. Anybody else? What would you do with this text? Oh, something's hitting. What would you do with it? Yes, David. A travel log of a Mediterranean. Yeah, that's coming from. That's coming. I'll just take this thing out of my back pocket and put it in my side pocket, I think. That's coming from a geography teacher. Are we still all right here, James? Yeah. Anybody else? A title? What was that, Hayden? Maltese. Are they lollies? Oh, I knew that. Yeah, okay. Oh, thanks, Hayden. Very clever. Yes, Alison. Keeping steadfast. Okay. Anyone else? Yes, Chris. A sailor's life is not a happy one. A few. Yes, sir. Oh, very good. 2 weeks in a leaky boat. You can come back again. Okay. One final one. Oh, yeah, okay. Very good, Robert. Losing and finding your anchor. I mean, I really struggled to know what to talk about from this passage, and you're probably thinking, well, we've guessed that, Mick. You've already used up 10 minutes. when I was struggling with this text, some earlier versions that I had was, how many here like to travel by sea? I mean, who here has got a phobia when it comes to traveling on water? Now, I know Ruby has. I used to have a phobia when it came to traveling by air. Not so much now, but Ruby, very much in terms of traveling by water. Anybody else with traveling by water? A show of hands, a fear of only a few. What about by air? Anyone by air? Oh, most of you just love traveling. Okay. So I thought, we could talk about phobia, we could talk about fear, and that's a worthy topic. And then, of course, you've got the whole thing with the snake. And I thought of, we could talk about, have any of you had a misadventure around animals? for me, I've been attacked by dogs twice. But the animal or the critter or the creature or the insect that has given me most harm has been the smallest. And that, of course, is the mosquito. And I've had dengue fever 3 times. From the female mosquito that has a white strip on its back. Anybody else here had an animal accident? Show of hands? Okay. So I thought, we could have gone down that pathway, and I thought, no, that's not quite serious enough. And then I thought, I could do some things around Malta. Anyone been to Malta? This is where he ended up, Paul, on the island of Malta. Do you know where Malta is? I mean, there's Italy, and then south of Italy there's Sicily, and then even south of Sicily there is the island of Malta. And I thought, I'll do a little bit of research on shipwrecks. So I started down that track. And Malta is well known, actually, for its dangerous reefs, and its, we're not putting any slides up, no. And shipwrecks. So I thought we could go down that route. Oh, no pun intended. And I thought, no. And then I thought, we could do some scholarly stuff this morning. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but I sort of gave hint at it, that when it comes to about September, around this area of the world, it is very dangerous to travel by sea. And when it gets to mid-November in the East Mediterranean world, in mid-November, ships very rarely travel. That used to be the case, and I'm not so sure now, but definitely in Paul's time, you just didn't travel by sea come mid-November. And so it's no wonder that Paul knew that, things were not going too well. I mean, he was a seasoned sea traveler. He'd already experienced 3 shipwrecks. By this time. And there was one shipwreck where he was adrift for a day and a night at sea. And we're told that in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 25. So, I mean, Paul sort of knew, you know, the terrain. He knew the season. And he knew that mid-November, and of course we're mid-November, don't travel at this time. And then I thought, well, no, I don't really want to feed off that. So then I thought, well, I could even do some more scholarly work and look into the archaeological side of things. And so I did. Are you interested? And you know, in, as I said in one version, they did drop four anchors. Four. And so in the 1960s, an explorer, an archaeologist, went to Malta and explored the bays around Malta to see if they could find four anchors in a row. And then a shipwreck on that particular flow or stream and so on. And in the 1960s they did. And it's and the area is called St. Thomas's Bay in Malta. And so I thought, you know, maybe we could, you know, and there's some debate still about whether that was the actual ship or another ship, but there are echoes that we're hearing that this kind of story actually happened. But then I thought, no, I'm getting nowhere. Who would like my job? And then to confound things even more, I've had one of those weeks. Anybody else here, have you had one of those weeks? How many here, show of hands? You know, you've just had one of those weeks. I've had one of those weeks. It all began with some family drama. And during the early part of this week, you know, things just happened with us as a Duncan family that caused a fair measure of grief. And so it was just, you know, that was the beginning of the week. And then I got to the middle of the week, and the Baptist Union, some months ago, they asked me if I could help another church in the Auckland region that was going through some very difficult stuff. And so I had my final meeting with them midweek, and that was really intense. I had to facilitate a path, you know, a reconciliatory thing, and it was just intense. And then on Thursday I flew to Sydney, and I was interviewed on TV, and I absolutely botched it. Why do you guys laugh? And it was just a botch up. And I just was not on my game. And, you know, no one talked to me after the interview. And so you have all this TV crew and interviewers. And you know, you just know deep down when you haven't. And they only did one feed run. You know, only, in other words, there wasn't going to be an editing and a cut and paste afterwards. It was, they were trying to keep the cost down, so there was just one run on this thing, and I absolutely botched it. And I was on the train coming back to the city of, you know, the heart of the city. And do you do this when you've made a huge mistake? You rehearse it, you go over 100 times, and so I've had a lousy week. And of course, Paul in this passage, he's having one of those months. I mean, I had one of those weeks. Well, Paul is having one of those months. And, you know, he's having a shipwreck, and he's been bitten by snakes, and you know, going without food. And he's having one of those months. It's just like one setback after another. And then, you know, I think, you know, for some of us in this room, we've had whole seasons of setbacks. If you have, two hands in the air. And, you know, I think I've told you before that I went through a 25-year period in my own life where it was just like one disappointment after the other. 25 years. I actually wrote a book about it, as you do. And I wrote this book, and it just chronicles an awful season in my life where one thing after another went wrong. And of course, some people, they feel their whole life has been like that, where it's just one setback after the other. So I got back, I flew in, you know, early yesterday evening, And I'm thinking, what the heck do I talk about? And so instead of just relaxing, and I was really tired and wasted, you know, I had to go into my study last night for your sake. It's all your fault. And bury myself for 2 hours, and then still very little light, and then get up early this morning. That's why I was tripping over my words as I read the passage, because I'm a bit tired, and still trying to work out, you know, what do I do with this text? And then I remembered something, and I'm nearly done. I remembered something 2 weeks ago, and someone sent me a story. And the story goes like this, and it's about Tony Campolo. And Tony, he spoke here. I don't know if some of you were here, you came to it. It was in my first year of 2011. And I know Tony. I mean, I'm not name dropping here, because I'm about to talk not about people, but I'm about to talk about people that I know. And so I'm not just sort of spreading gossip here. These are people that I know. I mean, Tony actually did a foreword for one of my books, and so we've had a little bit to do with each other. The Americans have a thing called Thanksgiving. Actually, this year it's November 27. So November is popping up in this little talk of mine. There was, last year in Thanksgiving, Tony and Peggy, that's his wife, they had their Thanksgiving, and they sat down, and in the American system, when you do Thanksgiving, the whole whānau, the whole family gather around, and that's really the time of the year when family get together. And so their son Bart, Bart, their son Bart came for Thanksgiving, and they all sat around and had a great time. And then after the meal, I don't know if some of you have heard this, but after the meal, Bart, their son, said to Tony and Becky, his mother and dad, he said, could we have a private chat? And so Bart pulled his parents aside, and they went into another room, and they had this private chat, and they sat down, and Bart said to his parents, he said, I have chucked my faith overboard. I know you, Mum, Dad, are strong Christians. I am now no longer a Christian. In fact, he said, I have joined the American Secular Humanist Organization, and I now, he said to his parents, travel through America, and I'm now their spokesperson. And I now speak for the anti-God lobby. And he says, I have chucked my faith absolutely overboard. Now, this was a huge setback for Tony and for Peggy. And Tony ended up saying things that he later regretted. I mean, as you would. I mean, they were just rocked, you know. And then Bart proceeded to tell his parents why. Did anyone else strike this story a couple of weeks ago? So Bart then told why this had occurred, and it goes like this. Bart said it all began when he was a youth worker and a 9-year-old girl was raped when he was a youth worker. And when he went and visited this 9-year-old girl, one of his youth group, and when he went and visited her, this little girl who had been sexually violated, he came away from her room expressing doubt like never before. How could God allow this? The years went by, and two of his friends came out as gay. So they came out as homosexual. And Tony, I mean, Bart, when he saw these two mates of his who'd come out as gay, and they were close mates. What Bart did, in a sense, he took a razor blade. And he took a razor blade to his Bible. And he didn't do this literally, but figuratively he did. And he started to cut out the passages that had anything to do with God not accepting certain sexual behaviors. So he ended up expressing incredible doubt about the Bible. Almost, you know, cutting huge swaths of pages out of it and throwing them in the dustbin. And then in 2011, recently, he himself, Bart, was involved in a motorbike accident. And as he was laying on his bed in the hospital, he heard himself say these words, and I'm going to quote him. Now, I know Bart. I'm not name-dropping here. I mean, in my role as a speaker, I get to share the platform with a number of other speakers, and I did a conference, and Bart was one of the other speakers. So I'm not talking about people here. I think you know that. And Bart and Tony have gone out publicly on this stuff. So I'm not sharing out of turn either. They've put this out for the public domain. In fact, they're both, like good Americans, they're both writing a book about it now. And it'll come out even more so. But as Bart was lying in that hospital bed, after those first two encounters or setbacks, now in this third setback, his own motorbike accident, he heard himself say these words. When this body dies, I think that will be the end of Bart Campolo. I don't think I will be going anywhere. I don't even believe in eternal life anymore. This whole thing has put a dent in my faith, more than a dent. And then he went on to say that for him, the death and resurrection of Jesus was but a myth. And he's completely chucked his own faith overboard. Here's my question this morning. You know, Paul, he had his setbacks, but he kept the faith. And Bart Campolo had his setbacks. You know, he had one of those weeks, one of those months, one of those seasons, one of those lives, as Paul did. But Bart threw his faith overboard. Why is it that two people can go through exactly the same thing, a whole series of setbacks? Why is it that some keep the faith and some shipwreck their faith? Why is that? Now, you know people that have been through heaps of stuff, and some they keep the faith, and others, they chuck it overboard. Now, why is that? You know what's coming next. Turn to the person next to you. Go to it. Okay, guys. We're now going to share the table. But before we do, I have to give you a part answer to that question. And it's only a part answer because there are many things that one could say. But what I decided to do was to go out online and actually track down the YouTube clip where Bart Campolo speaks for himself. And I did, and if you, some of you are actually wanting to track this, I can give you the details later. And this is what Bart said of himself. And it goes like this. He said, you know, when I became a Christian, and see the fingers? He said, when I became a Christian, he said, I only did it because of what I could get out of it. He said, when I saw the Christian scene, he said, I just loved the fact that here was a group of nice and good people. This is Bart saying this, not me. And he said, I just thought, I just would love to be a part of a group like that. You know, it's like I'll be a part of a group. And he went on and said, it will be like a place of belonging for me. And he said, it would be like, it would help shape my identity as a person. And those were the words he used. But he was quite clear. He said, you know, the basis on which I became a Christian, the basis on which I became a Christian was the basis of what I could get out of it. And he said it had very little to do with who Jesus was and is. So the whole basis of his becoming a Christian was what he could get out of it, rather than who Jesus is. And it seems to me that the people who often throw their faith overboard, they actually come into the Christian thing essentially on the basis of what they can get out of it. You know, it's like I can get forgiveness and like God clicks the ticket, I go to heaven, that God can, you know, ease my disappointments, that God can help my dreams to come true, that I'll have fewer disappointments in life, that he will bless me. And the people who come to the Christian faith because of what they will get out of it are the ones who invariably end up, when setbacks and disappointments roll in, they are the ones who invariably are quick to chuck it all overboard. And you see, I think what Bart shares with us is a salutary warning to us as a church. Because Bart said, what I liked about the Christian thing was the sense of group. And so he stayed in because of group. And I think that's our danger. I think our danger, because we are group, and we are a good group, and we are a strong group. And these are things to cherish. But this is not the basis of why we are Christian. Because of what we get out of it. The basis of why we are what we are is because of who Jesus is. And that's what this table is about. It is a reminder. It is a calling to memory of who Jesus is. You see, we are not here just about being a place of belonging. We are about also being a people who believe in someone. And that person is Jesus. And Paul knew this Jesus. And because for Paul, it wasn't about what he would get out of Christianity, but rather who was the founder of Christianity, he kept the faith. And so as your pastor, you know, there's only a few times I'll say this. I feel sometimes we just need to put the fingers on the pulse afresh. And you know, just periodically, not in a guilt-driven manner. I think Bart put his fingers on the pulse. And I applaud Bart for his honesty. But I'm saddened by his decision. But it just seems to me that periodically, church, we just need to put our fingers on the pulse and say, why do we do this? What is it all about? Is it about me and what I get out of this? Or is it essentially about him? Come what may. I just think sometimes we need that heart reality check. Is that okay? So, what we're going to do is we're going to call to memory him, Creator God, who came in the form of a human person and walked this planet. God. And he summons you to worship him. And this is what it's all about. To give your allegiance to him. Because he's king. And we bow before no other. So I need some people to help me serve communion. And if you'd like to come on the basis of what is just said, and for you, your heart goes amen, you come up the front now and help me serve communion. Could I have some of you folk? If this is an amen to you, and this is yes, come up the front. Yeah. I'm going to ask too that before I hand the elements out, if there are some of us here, and I don't know, you and Jesus, you're struggling, and you just need some prayer. You know, your whole relationship with Jesus is just kind of, I don't know, it's rocky. And you know it is, and you need to see more of him. Not more of what you can get, but more of him. And you would just like someone to pray for you. I'd like you to come and sit in the front row as the elements are being shared. You just come quietly up the front, and then someone will come and pray for you. So if you just like prayer in your relationship with Jesus, you come and stand in the and sit in the front row here as these elements are being distributed. Let us pray. Our God, we come to you this morning. We come to you. We come to you. We come to you. We do come to you. We come to you. It is about you. We come to you. So take the bread and receive him. Not what you can get, but receive him. And take the cup and drink him. receive him. If you would like some prayer about you and Jesus, and you just wanting to see more of him, come and sit in the front row here and someone will pray with you. I know it's a hard thing to do, but it's a good thing to do.